Hey, this is Matt Hawkins, and you're listening to the Top Cow Chronology Project.
Hello, and welcome to the Comic Horse Presents the Top Cow Chronology Project. This is your co-host, Jace, along with my good buddy, Manny.
Hello.
And in this episode, we'll be covering Tales of the Witchblade number 8, cover date of October 1999. Writers Bill O'Neill and Michael Turner. Pencilers are listed as the Draxhall Jump Studios and Christian Zanier. Inker Richard Bonk. Colorist Nathan Cabrera. Richard Horry, Tanya Horry, and John Starr. So, as I've said before, if you want to follow along with us on the Top Cow Chronology Project,
you can go to our website, thecomicsourceblog.com, go to the Top Cow Chronology page, and if you look off to the right, there is a logo for Comic Vine. That's actually a link that'll take you directly to Condor's Comic Vine Top Cow Chronology. So you can take a look, see which books are coming up next. That'll give you an idea of where we're headed, and it'll also give you a chance to pick up the books ahead of time if you want to read them ahead of time so you can follow along. As far as Tales of the Witchblade is concerned, it's out of print as far as any kind of trade paperback. They never did an actual full trade paperback collecting the whole series. I mentioned last episode that I thought they had, but actually what they did was a series of collected editions that had like two issues each. So really, I think your best bet is to just pick up the issues individually. I see a lot of them on eBay for like 99 cents, or perhaps you can find a lot. That goes the same for some books that we have coming up. Next episode is a Darkness one-shot, but then following that is a Medieval Spawn Witchblade, which there is a collected trade paperback of that. That is available on eBay. Also, a lot of the individual issues, anywhere from a penny all the way up to about $14.99, I think I saw for a trade paperback. I saw another trade paperback for $10, another trade paperback for $4. So, yeah, if you want to follow along, your best bet is just to kind of plan ahead. Just do a Google search for the book, and you know, you can put whatever the title happens to be and then put trade paperback after, and that'll give you an idea. You see what pops up, you'll see what trade paperback maybe it was collected in, if it was. As I said, Comixology is always a good place to look, and some of the more mainstream books, you'll definitely see them on instocktrades.com if you want to have the physical book. So any Witchblade or Darkness we cover, you know, those trades are pretty much always in print, so you can always pick those up.
Okay, what were your initial thoughts on Tales of the Witchblade number 8, the part 2 of the story?
Well, it didn't disappoint. The battle in the beginning, I kind of saw it happening that way. I was a bit skeptical given what we had read before in Witchblade 8 with how that turned out, with how quick that battle was and how it really didn't seem like Sarah should have beat Irons that easily. And now we see the princess and this god going head to head, and it really didn't disappoint. It you know, her overconfidence with her new armor really let her down, because I think for a moment she forgot that she was fighting a god, and in a moment's notice she just flipped a switch and it was over.
Yeah, I would say my overall impressions of this issue is it did not go at all as I expected it to, and not necessarily story wise, but more character. It kind of flipped on me, like when I read the first half of the story, I took it as the goddess, the cat goddess Bastet. She was kind of the person in the wrong, or, you know, not necessarily the bad guy, because it really wasn't, you know, bad guy. It was kind of more of a gray situation. But I took her as the antagonist, and I took the Princess Raquel as being the more heroic of the two. And then this issue starts, and right away it's totally flipped.
Yeah.
And it's clear to me by the end of this story that Princess Raquel was, you know, kind of, even though she's the bearer of the Witchblade, and we see in the 8 issues of Witchblade that we read so far, issues 1 through 8, that Sarah Pazzini, possessor of the Witchblade, is clearly a hero. Princess Raquel is not. Not in the slightest. So let me do a quick rundown of the issue, and I'll start that off by saying that the cover done by Christian Zanier, Sean Parsons, and Peter Steigerwald is really, really well done. It's just a beautifully both rendered cover and colored by Peter Steigerwald very well also. And that's the regular cover that I'm speaking of, because as a lot of Top Cow books back in the day used to do, it had multiple covers. So this issue starts off, and it picks up right where we left off with the last issue, with Bastet and Raquel about to fight over the affections of Prince Sala. And Bastet says that she has no desire to hurt Princess Raquel, but she'll do what she has to. So she fires a blast with the Witchblade, and Bastet calls up a shield, and part of the power is kind of deflected towards Sala. Bastet immediately shows some concern for Sala, says, "Don't move, don't provoke the Asp. It's already too late. The Asps are heading toward Prince Sala," so she turns him to stone. And Princess Raquel takes that as a sign that Bastet does indeed not love Prince Sala, because she turned him to stone. She says, "I knew your love for Sala was false." However, Bastet claims that her love is pure. The prince is now impervious to the spells and the snakes. And as Manny stated, it wasn't too tough for Bastet to defeat Princess Raquel, even with the Witchblade. She basically comes up, she kind of splits herself into, I don't even know how many, probably 9, considering, you know, she's the goddess of cats, so 9 lives.
Oh.
And gets a hand on to Princess Raquel and puts her to sleep. She basically says the word sleep, and that's it. Raquel's out. She then turns the prince back into flesh and says it was the surest way to protect you. And we see on the next page a little later, Princess Raquel is back in her own quarters, and she's venting about how she's been embarrassed and that the weapon is useless. Next time she'll strike like an assassin. No one embarrasses her. She'll have her revenge. She won't rest until Bastet is torn, maimed, and dead. And so she pretty much throws a temper tantrum like a little spoiled brat. And she doesn't even seem to really, like, she doesn't even care about the prince.
No.
She even, and then her mother comes in and says, "How stupid, what a stupid thing have you done? He's called off the wedding." And she says she's going to fix it. She tells Raquel that she better do whatever she has to do in order for this marriage to happen. "Listen to me very carefully. It's you who are clouded. Love is a lie. Love is not real. Power is what matters." Raquel responds that she doesn't want his love, she wants his attention. So again, that whole spoiled, she can't stand being second to anything. It seems that jealousy and greed are the only two emotions that she feels. So mother says, "You'll do whatever you have to do, even if it means kissing Bastet's feet, to make this marriage happen." And while Raquel agrees with her mother, we see that she has no intentions of not following through on her threats to destroy Bastet. So we see that Raquel's brother goes and speaks to Prince Sala, because apparently they're old friends, convinces him to give Princess Raquel another chance. Meanwhile, Raquel has gone to a sorcerer, has him create a statue that will remove the life force of a cat, and apparently a cat goddess. Then we see that Prince Sala and Bastet are agreeing that they love each other and wish to be together forever. Bastet informs Sala that only once an immortal can bestow true immortality upon a mortal. She says, "Sala, I want you for all time," and apparently with a kiss bestows immortality on Prince Sala. Then we see 2 days later, Princess Raquel shows up. She says that she's sorry, she behaved foolishly. She promises it won't happen again. She wishes those two happiness for all eternity and will present these gifts as symbols of her love for them both. And she presents Prince Sala with some kind of a bracelet. And then the statue that will take the spirit of a cat to Bastet, which it does. And the prince is beside himself. He's totally distraught. He says that he wants Princess Raquel to bring her back. And she says, back, I can't. He says, then you will die. She says, no, stay away. Anubis' weapon will kill you if you don't. Sala, no, I did it for us. And Sala says, quite truthfully and with great clarity of thought, that you did it for you. For you, for you, which is extremely true. That is the case. She doesn't care about Sala, no matter what she's claimed previously. She did it for herself, for revenge, and so that she would be foremost in Sala's life. So the Witchblade lashes out at Sala, and as he kills Princess Raquel, we see that his wounds are healing immediately. He is indeed become immortal per the gift that Bastet bestowed on him. He lays her down in the tomb he originally constructed for himself and says that he will find a way. I won't rest until you are returned to me. And then we see on the epilogue, it's been a long time, my love, but I think finally we're near the end. And it says to be continued in the pages of Witchblade. So I take that to mean that this epilogue is much more close to modern times. Sala is indeed been immortal all this time and has apparently found a way to restore Bastet to life. So
yeah, and we find that story in The Mummy.
The Mummy? The movie The Mummy?
Yeah, this is the prequel to The Mummy.
Huh. I'm not that familiar. I've seen it once, but so I guess part of those legends will play out in future issues of Witchblade also. So yeah, enjoyable issue, enjoyable story. What's interesting about this story, the first part seemed so simple and straightforward, and it seemed like it was going to be a self-contained two-part story. We were going to read it and be done with it, and that was going to be the end of it. Just kind of an old throwback story of the Witchblade. But with that kind of juxtaposition, that switch in what I expected of hero-villain, Bastet being actually the much more heroic of the two, and Princess Raquel being much more evil, even though she was the bearer of the Witchblade, and with this immortality bestowed on Sala, and now we see it's going to spin up into more of the modern times of Witchblade. So definitely intriguing to see what lasting effects and what threads from this story will show up in modern-day Witchblade.
Yeah, they had really good character development, because just from the beginning of the fight, you realize who really cares for the prince, that Bastet really cares for the prince, and Raquel's really, really in it for herself.
Yeah, she fires at her, and the blast goes everywhere, and she doesn't for one second stop to think, oh, he could have been hurt. But that's immediately the first thought of Bastet.
Yeah, and then before she goes any further with the battle, she casts a spell on him to turn him into stone to protect him.
Yeah.
I mean, if that doesn't say, I'm with you, and then after the battle, the first thing she does is goes over and you get this very great piece of artwork of a Bastet holding Sala in her arms, while he's unconscious, and it kind of gives you the idea that, all right, maybe this is for real, it's not the god having some sort of trick up her sleeve or dubious plan. And then you go to the next page, and the first thing you see is the princess just beside herself in anger because she was embarrassed. Not because she, didn't win his affection, but because she feels embarrassed.
Yeah.
And because her, and her. It was all about her. And then all of a sudden, as a reader, you're just thinking, wait a minute, what just happened here? I thought that the god was going to reveal her plan, and then Raquel's gonna save the day, and so now you're interested in what happens next. You go through all the consequences of her actions, which we thought maybe was gonna change her mind and she was gonna settle down, but no, her ego leads her to more pain, more suffering, and then the relationship between Bastet and Salah takes another step because she grants him immortality. I mean, if that's not proof enough, I don't know what is. So, it took us down a really good path, really nice roller coaster emotion.
Unexpected path.
Yeah, and then when you realize what happens at near the end, you talked about you know, how she gets this statue that that kills her. It's only after she really tries to kill him did I once again remember, oh my God, he's immortal.
Yep.
So it's interesting to see how that's gonna play out. It really leaves you wanting more.
Yeah, it makes me wonder though about how the Witchblade goes about choosing a bearer, because clearly this person is not worthy as far as being, you know, heroic. There's nothing really heroic about her. She doesn't really have too many redeeming qualities. She's all about herself, and she doesn't wield it particularly well. You know, she's defeated in battle relatively simply by Bastet, and then even when she is confronted by Sala after she steals Bastet's spirit, he chokes her to death, you know, and even though the Witchblade's trying to stop him, you know, and shoots out the tendrils that impale him, you know, she's unable to prevent him from killing her. So it makes me wonder if perhaps she was chosen by the Witchblade and she wasn't worthy, so the Witchblade really did nothing but the most basic attempt to save her, or perhaps being that maybe she's the first person to ever wield the Witchblade, or the first person in such a long time. And we don't know the actual origin, so it's hard to say. You know, maybe the Witchblade wasn't as powerful at this point. So definitely something going on there. And don't get me wrong, she certainly gets what she deserves in the end. I'm not sad to see her go. But it does raise some interesting questions. And I'm interested to see if we're going to see more of Bastet and Sala. Prince Sala will be successful in reviving her in the modern day book.
Yeah, it'll definitely interested as well. We'll see what happens.
Yep. Okay, join us next time for another episode of the Comic Source Presents the Top Cow Chronology Project. And in that episode, we will be covering our first issue of The Darkness that we're going to read. And that is actually The Darkness Vicious Traditions One Shot. And that book was actually just published last year, 2014, by Top Cow. So clearly it's a book that, although published very recently, is a look back into the past at the Darkness. And let me see if I can find a publishing date for that real fast. Yeah, that is from March 2014, so don't know that it's been collected anything yet, but I'm sure it won't be hard to find, being that it's so recent. So if you want to follow along, go out, get yourself a copy of The Darkness Vicious Traditions, or find it on Comixology, and join us next time to see what Manny and I think of the book.
So once again, I want to thank everyone for joining us. Don't forget, you can like us on Facebook. Just do a search for The Comic Source. That's us. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/TheComicSource. Or you can drop us an email at thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. And of course, you can always contact us through our website, thecomicsourceblog.com. And go to our website. You can check out the sketch gallery. You can see Manny's blog. You can watch my YouTube videos there. Give us some feedback. Let us know how we're doing. We'll talk to you next time.